Hi, I'm Rod.
And I'm Yasmina.
Welcome to Life Trek. Today we're, well, you can describe what we're doing.
I thought you're...
Oh, well, today we're...
You're the writer.
we are waiting in a parking lot right now in front of an Asian food market, and right between that and Starbucks, drinking some coffee, having just dropped off Yasmina's dad for...
Cataract surgery. Reluctantly wanted to go.
He did not want to go.
Canceled twice.
So, I mean, navigating our system here in the States. So he's an immigrant from Morocco to the States and living here in Oregon. And, you know, a lot of things are just the unknown. And it's a strange system for him to navigate, and filling out medical forms that are kind of scary because they cover everything and they ask all kinds of difficult questions.
Yeah, there's always this informed consent, you know, making sure that you know the risks. And so they have like a list of bleeding, blood clotting,
possible death,
seizures. And so, yeah, he's like, I think I'm good.
Maybe I don't want to
go blind before I have this surgery.
Yeah. Like listening to all the possible side effects from the different medication commercials and stuff like that, where you're like, why would anybody ever take that? But he's in there now, and hopefully the surgery will go well. And meanwhile, we're drinking coffee and hanging out in the parking lot.
Good times. Mm-hmm. On my day off, was it President's Day today, right?
Yep.
It's a day off. It's a federal holiday.
Both of us have the day off, yeah.
Great way to spend the day.
That's part of why I love you, because family's important to you, and taking care of those people in your life. That's important to me too. And you know, if I have a friend or family that calls and says they need help with something, I'm gonna pick up and go help. And I know that's you too.
I kind of don't have a choice, though.
You do have a choice.
My sister-in-law actually just called me just now and left a message. My sister called and left a message this morning. So, you know, culturally, there's part of this obligation, though, whether you like it or not, that you have to. And I think that's when we talk about, like, blending the families, you know, you coming from more of the Western American culture and then myself with the Moroccan culture. Like, you woke up, but we left the house at 6 a.m. to get here by 6:45, you know, to pick my dad up and fill out forms. And so, like, blending those cultures together, it's out of obligation, you know, you do it. And of course, out of love too. But the older they get, at least in my culture, it's like the less they even understand at how to, and they expect then the children to take care of them. And you know, you support that, where like your dad, you know, and your family, they are self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Unless they like maybe get dementia or something where they actually need physical assistance, or medical assistance.
Yeah, and they're self-sufficient and they know the systems here. They know what to expect, and they know that, oh, well, this is just one of those forms I have to fill out. It's not a big deal. It's routine.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. They're not reading every word going, oh, my God, I could die.
you do a really good job at supporting that, because, you know, this is part of my culture, kind of what you do. And, you know, you just jump in the car and are along for the ride.
I'm your driver.
You're my driver, yeah. So yeah. What else is happening today? I think that's pretty much the bulk of today. And then part of the discussion we talked about, you know, the healthcare system in this country, not to get too into the politics like we talked about. But, you know, I talk a lot about this, seeing firsthand going in and not necessarily being the caregiver, the interpreter, but I am that, I guess, liaison between the two different cultures, and understanding why, when immigrants come here, why they can't navigate the healthcare system. I mean, you need a degree to understand even the basics of it, kind of like in-network provider, out-network provider, it gets really, really complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just moving this so that we don't mess up the microphone too much.
Elbows. But not to bore people with the healthcare system, but...
But it's kind of why we're looking at, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, but one of the things that we want to do in the future is move to Spain or Portugal or somewhere where we're in Europe, we're in a better climate, we're closer to family and all those things. And we've looked at the healthcare systems there. And I know that with our son, when we were like in Ceuta, Spain, and he had an asthma attack, we were not left off high and dry. We're in Spain where there's universal health care, and what happened?
Yeah, they took him in and they admitted him in. We showed him our passports as form of ID, and they did a really good job at, well, we did have my cousin who speaks Spanish,
helped us out.
Our butchered Spanish,
yeah,
and helped us out and was able to provide him assistance where...
And he got treatment.
Yeah, and we didn't pay anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just, I mean, he didn't need anything humongous, but nevertheless, like, if that had been here, it would have been super expensive if we could have done it at all. Mm-hmm. And so having that universal health care was amazing. And they just don't have that here, where, like, Spain or Portugal or lots of other European countries that exists. And not to... You know, like, we want to go there not to take advantage of that, because we both have jobs, we both have health insurance here, and we do just fine. But because we also believe in the system more. We're willing to pay into a system that's going to take care of our entire society. And while I am an American, grew up here, was former military and all those other kinds of things, so I'm about as American as they get, but I also... I also believe that we need to operate not as just rugged individuals. I think that whole thing is a lie that just leaves a lot of people in the cold. And there's no good reason for it. You know, we should take care of each other. We are our brother's keeper in so many ways. And if we're not, we're not being responsible. And we're not being good Americans to each other, you know, good countrymen to each other. And it's something I would love to see change about this country, is us taking care of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially now that I'm being a caregiver to my parents and seeing the care that they receive versus, you know, that I get with my insurance through my employer. And then, you know, if you don't have a good job that provides good health care, then, you know, essentially you're screwed.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what that's going to prompt us to find a location, not to say like Portugal or Spain. I think I've always loved Spain, and I've always loved like the food, the culture. I thought I was part Spanish. Unfortunately, I'm not.
To expand on that, because we did a
23andMe.
Yeah, DNA test thing, and turns out...
And my mom has the last name, Spanish last name, which is Puimpo.
Yeah.
And my grandmother has like jet black... black hair and you know, dark eyes.
Well, you could say that for all of Africa.
Not everyone. There's a lot of, like, my sister-in-law, she got blonde hair and greener blue eyes. But I just loved everything Spanish, like the food, the language.
And it turns out you're Korean. No.
Like, well, was it 8 generations back, Korean? But 94 or 96%, I think it was 94-96% North African. It was this, you know, like in the northern region of Hosima, that's where my dad's from.
Yeah.
So that was not that exciting to find out.
No, yeah.
Versus with you, what, so half Jewish?
Yeah, more than half, I think. About half, anyway. Ashkenazi Jewish, and then a mixture of Northern European stock, you know, from France and England and Norway and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
You had more of a mix.
Yeah.
It was like North African.
And like 1.5-2%, I don't remember what it is, so Neanderthal. So,
that's what it was, yeah. Yeah, so I've always loved the Spanish culture, and then... learning about Portugal, but I still want to explore other areas, and that's what we're going to do. Last year, pre-COVID, was to go down to Malaga and start exploring that area. And, you know, now that was Madeira, that you know, was an island.
Oh, yeah.
Still in that region, but I think that's what's going to prompt me is, like, looking at universal healthcare, something that you can pay into and not just an ungodly amount of money. And the lifestyle, you know, mm-hmm. just having the more, you know, simple community, yeah, feel. And I mean, I love the U.S. and I love parts of the U.S. and it's a great place to make money, but you're always busy all the time. And, you know, finding that space where we can walk to the town and grocery shopping and fresh food and, of course, the sun.
Yeah, we could always be like, you know, those older people who moved to Florida and get in that little retirement community.
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, I always go for the diversity just because I'm always fascinated by the different languages that are being spoken. And not to say that Florida doesn't have any diversity, but making sure that I'm always around different people, different backgrounds. And
I love the whole idea of travel and different foods and seeing new things, we both really enjoy that. So, I mean, there's a lot of this country that I would love to introduce you to here in the States, and I'm sure we'll get there when we're not spending so much time raising kids and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, like you, I lived in Europe and I really loved that too. I love trying new things and seeing new places and meeting new people. It's really fun.
Yeah, like I told you, I've always talked about bridging that gap, you know, again, my two worlds, and I always feel like Europe can bridge that because there's Morocco. I mean, I have like this love-hate relationship with my country. Love the food and the culture and my family, but then, you know, it's a developing country, so their system, well, there is no really system, whatever they have is, I would say corrupt in some areas it is, but it's just...
Or cobbled together.
Yeah, pieced together. And so looking for a place where, you know, safety, of course, is always a priority. And not to say, like, some cities in Morocco are very, very safe. So we'll see what we end up with.
But yeah.
Always going for that Portugal and Spain.
It's still looking pretty good. Yeah.
It is, yes. I think the sun and the beach.
Yeah, and even just the short time that we spent in Ceuta, which is, if our listeners don't know, which is, it's actually on the peninsula of North Africa, just north of Morocco, and it's a tiny little peninsula that belongs to Spain. And Spain has a few properties like that in North Africa, or islands and whatnot that are scattered around, little enclaves that are part of Spain. I think Portugal does too. but that was just, it was beautiful. And it was like being in Europe once you stepped across that border there. It was, the change was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's within, so the border was, it's not a wall, I guess it's a fencing, and it's pretty secure. Once you cross over from Morocco to Spain, to Ceuta, I would say it still looked like you're Morocco, and you still saw people coming in, so the supplies, like the contraband, so people have like they're carrying lots of supplies trying to cross the border. And then so it looked like you didn't even leave Morocco, but then probably a few miles out, it was like you were in a different world. I mean,
not even that far. It was probably a mile.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a perfect place. That's why I was looking for a house there, because that literally would bridge my two worlds together.
Yeah, yeah.
We divided with a fence.
Yeah. 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 Expensive.
Yeah, once we started looking at the housing, that the houses that were there, they were expensive. And one thing that I did not like there, coming from a public health, is the smoking. The smoking, like the smoking in the apartment building, I could smell the smoke. And then when we were in the coffee shop, and this might be standard in Europe were in Spain, but we were sitting there at the coffee shop, and then just clouds of cigarette smoke. And that's the part where I wouldn't mind so much outside, because then I can move around, but in buildings, I would not be able to do that.
That's definitely something. When I was growing up here in the States, before we had all these laws about smoking, I remember when that all started passing here on the West Coast in Washington and Oregon, and there just wasn't the amount of smoking in restaurants and stuff like that, or they were segregated off into certain areas. And then when I grew up a little bit more and was stationed on the East Coast in the Army and then later in college, I remember at first being really surprised how much smoking there was going on there in public spaces. Like, what the heck? It was just gross. And well, anyway.
Smoking is gross. It can kill you.
And then, of course, more laws got passed around the country. And then going from there to Europe and then seeing that all over again, where in some places in Europe, they were still behind those kinds of laws. And smoking was everywhere again. It was like, whoa, you know. But it is really bad for you. Yeah, you're right.
Put that on my list, you know, as we start talking about these things and, you know, putting together this priority list. You know, a lot of times people say, you know, what areas do I want to live in, or what are the most popular areas? So I'm part of this group on Facebook. It's like expats in Spain and expats in actually Panama and Portugal.
Which I support that, but it makes no sense for your goals, because
I think I just like to hear what other people are saying. I know I probably need to remove myself from that, but a group.
Or Costa Rica.
Costa Rica, yeah. But don't give me any ideas. I might join that Facebook group too. And a lot of folks say, well, you know, first you need to come there, you know, and kind of explore, which, you know, is understandable, but we're in the middle of a pandemic and you can't do that. It's helpful to hear what other people, where people are living, and you have to have a starting point. But then what are your requirements? And that part of smoking was not part of that list. Like a lot of people talk about, you know, I'm a surfer, I love golfing, and I have to be, you know, in the city. So obviously places like in more in the southern Portugal are not going to fit, you know, your criteria. But I'm thinking now, maybe smoking, because that's a big, not say turn off. What is a big turn off?
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
So, well, what I'm going down the road of public health and smoking.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably going to come up, you know, or at least the public health things, because that is part of your life. That'll come up, you know, more often as do. I'm sure we'll have reoccurring themes as we go forward, but I suppose we could wrap this up. And we're going to have to head back to the hospital here in just a bit, but I really enjoy these talks with you and look forward to more.
I always love these talks with you.
Hi, I'm Rod.
And I'm Yasmina.
And welcome to Life Trek. Speaking of which, we're going on a trek this morning. We're actually in the car driving on our way to Multnomah Falls to go on Waikina Trail with our son and his girlfriend. His current girlfriend.
17 years old, that almost 18.
Change in 6 months or less. But yeah, so we thought, as we're headed out and we have some time, that we would also talk a little bit about investing in people.
Yeah, quality time, and how that on a Sunday we have an endless list of projects and chores, but how important it is to, you know, to carve out time to spend with people, especially children, especially Zachary, or teenagers that are almost graduating.
Yeah, they're at that point where, well, and that's the thing, is a lot of people think that little kids, when they're little, you know, like they need so much of your time and attention, all that, which is not untrue, but it's not as if they need less time as they become teenagers. They actually need more, but different time.
Yeah, they need your emotional time, physical and emotional time.
Yes. Yeah, because they're going through so many emotional things, especially So we're a blended family. So I had three kids before, and they're all out on their own. But now we have these two from Yasmina's previous marriage. And they are way more open than I was used to with my three previous kids, which I have close relationships with them, but...
Too much so. We're like, TMI.
Yeah, they'll say anything. Like,
but I think that's why, you know, like with Zachary wanting us to, well, he's already introduced us to his girlfriend and wanting to go out and hike with her, and, you know, left early this morning to go pick her up and meet us at Multnomah Falls so all four of us can go on a hike. I think that that's part of, you know, this ongoing healthy relationship with teenagers. Because a lot of times you hear, like, you know, teenagers at this point, they don't want to spend time with their parents. They're rebellious, can't wait to leave home, which the leave home is part is true. But I find that at least the younger teenagers, even the older ones too, they like hanging out with us, at least I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've told us that. Like Hara told you the other day, she's never embarrassed to hang out with you. She likes hanging out with you. You know, like some of her friends, you'd be kind of embarrassed to hang out with them, you know.
Well, parents. Well, and I think, well, with parents, a lot of times they're always trying to, you know, they are fearful of your kids doing things like, you know, they're always warning you, be careful. And, or if you'd share something with them, you know, parents are so quick to reprimand.
Yeah.
And they're less likely to share things with you. So, like, yesterday, Zahara downtown was hanging out with, you know, skateboarding with her friend. And they met up some other kids. And she let me know that they're vaping. She's like, but it's okay. I'm at least 10 feet away from them. And I think it's those types of relationships, this open communication that you have with your kids, that they're more likely to share things. Now, if she had said, she shared that with me, and I said, you know, make sure to not try anything or assume that she's going to vape, you know, now you're already sending this message of mistrust with your kids. So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they definitely, they share a lot. And a lot of that is because of that openness that you have with them and failure to just quickly judge. I mean, being that a good thing.
And spending time with them, you know, we talk about that, or at least you talk about that a lot, modeling that behavior. You know, even just this morning, how waking up and, you know, spending time with your significant other and going on a hike, that's something that we do. And then, yeah, we go out to lunch, and hearing Zachary say, well, you know, after the hike, I'm going to take her out to lunch and spend some time with her. You know, those are the types of behavior that I want to be modeled for our children.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that I wanted. I mean, I'm glad we got some time together with my three older kids before they moved out and went off into the world where they could see you and I interact in a healthy relationship. And I'm glad that our two younger ones are seeing that much more, even so that they know what a good wife is, a good husband is, how they should interact with each other, how they treat each other, how they communicate. You know, that's so important. I know both of us from our families growing up didn't get that modeled to us in the healthiest of ways. So,
oh yeah, not at all. That's a whole separate podcast.
Yeah, for sure. But today, as we go out to go spend some time with Zachary and his girlfriend and do some hiking, and together, obviously, we also have other relationships that we do this with a lot. Like every Friday, you go to Hillsboro and hang out with your parents who are, as we've said before, who are immigrants from Morocco that were sponsored here, or we have sponsored here, so they're living in Hillsboro and they're working and doing all that, and hopefully they're hoping to eventually become citizens, and they've got their green cards and all of that, so they're definitely here in a way that you haven't had for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And not being able to really spend any time with them except a couple of trips to Morocco. So it's a completely different thing. But now that they're here and you get to go see them every Friday and hang out with your mom and do all of that.
every single week.
What?
I said every single week.
Yeah.
Although, and I of course I come back and bring stories, and sometimes it's out of frustration or out of humor. But I've also noticed that Zahra, who's the youngest child, she has mentioned that that's what she looks forward to that this week, and she's getting an introduction of the kind of cultural side. Oh, this road is really bumpy. The cultural side of that aspect, and gets to hear the Arabic, gets to hear just the kind of back and forth between her grandparents and myself.
And your mom's friends.
But I like that she's getting, again, that little tiny bit of the Moroccan culture that otherwise she just has not gotten at all. Like when we go over there, my mom, the first thing she is like, you know, can I get you some tea, some coffee, some juice? And she cooks breakfast for her and likes to serve her. And I think she, Zahra, really enjoys the
attention.
The attention and getting dressed up and going out, because that's something that I grew up with, even though Morocco had a lot of its issues. What we did have was a lot of family, and you were just always surrounded by people. So maybe that's why I like investing in people, because, you know, it's a good part of my growing up.
Yeah, it's just very people. So, well, you grew up with how many cousins?
I have 50 first cousins.
Wow.
I've counted them all. And not to mention now those cousins have had their children. And so when we have weddings, we just don't even invite neighbors. I mean, you could, but it pretty much just fills up. You have to rent out a space to fill all of our family. And that's true for a lot of cultures, too. I think even here in the U.S., that was the case, you know, years ago, and more families becoming smaller and smaller. And even that's the case, too, in Morocco. You know, more and more families, both parents are working.
Yeah.
And here in the U.S., you know, you're so busy doing so many other things that it is so important to just take the time to unplug and take your kids out. Because before you know it, they are going to be all grown and left the house and, you know, kind of do their own thing. So why not invest, especially in your teenage years, invest a couple of years that, you know, once they leave home, you can, you know, you feel comfortable that they're going to at least want to come back and want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And the older kids have done that.
And on the other side of that, too, though, is one thing that, I mean, while it's really important to invest in your kids, you can't stop investing in your spouse. And so we have your mom's friend who seems like she's in not a great...
Yeah, we wanted anonymous.
Not the happiest.
I would say a lot. I wouldn't single someone out, but I would say I've heard over and over again, or time and time again, so many relationships, you know, you invest so much time into your children that when your children are all grown, you know, you kind of have lost this self-identity, especially as a female, more so if you have not, are working and you don't have a career. I mean, I think being a stay-at-home mom is a full-time job, but the downside is once those kids are all grown and out of the house and you haven't taken the time to spend some time with your spouse, and vice versa, you know, your spouse could be, you know, working full-time and not realizing, you're kind of left with this person that you don't
stranger
even stranger
in the house.
And so we talk about that a lot of, you know, in the next couple of years we're going to be kid free. Woo, so exciting. But we are thinking about those next ventures, where I do hear a lot of women say, I just don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And that's something where you need to stop and kind of self-reflect and think about whether you want to go back to school or even find something that you find enjoyable, because for so long you served your children.
Yeah. Well, and definitely you should always be in a bit of a mode of goal setting, like you and I do. We talk about the future all the time, and it's not empty talk. We are making plans and setting aside money and doing things that's going to ensure that we're going to be able to follow up on our dreams and our plans. And if you're not doing that, then you're going to get to the end of your kids getting out of high school and or college or whatever and taken off, and then what? Then you're scrambling, or then you're just living sort of an empty shell of an existence while you try to figure out why you're not happy, or what do you want to do next, or whatever. At least that's a possibility, and if you want to avoid that, you've got to start investing in your spouse and making plans for the future.
And it's little things. I mean, I've explained to Zachary too, it's like hiking, that analogy. You know, you do start off something with something small, and you can look back and think about, you know, how much progress you've made. A lot of times, so we've had this conversation a couple days ago, and I heard, you know, not to always pick on these kids, but one of the kids said, you know, this is what I'm going to be doing in my for my career in the future. And you kind of like put a plug in it, and therefore it almost, it tells yourself, it's reassuring to yourself, like, okay, well, I've got my career situated, but in actuality, you're doing nothing to get to that next step. And I see a lot of people, even adults, do that, where they say, well, you know, eventually I'm going to move to such and such place. But yet they have not, and like within the next year or two, and yet have not done anything in between. You're like, well, I don't think that is going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be big. It just can have to be these small things where maybe you're visiting a location or researching. And so we talk a lot about traveling to Portugal, but I think one of those things is doing, waking up in the morning and doing this, and going to a different hike and getting out and being adventurous. And they slowly add up.
Yeah, because we have long-term plans, but we also have shorter-term things that we, adventures that we do together that keep us interested in each other. And when you go do pursue your own thing, whatever, you know, and you're investing in your parents or a friend or whatever, like, I find that makes you more interesting, not less. When you do things to challenge yourself, to invest in yourself, to go to a class, to whatever, that's only making you a more interesting person to me. I think a lot of spouses get worried too, like if their spouse has friends, or they get more educated or whatever else, and they get sort of worried that, is that going to leave me in the dust? You know, are they going to fall out of love with me because they're all interested in these other things? And hopefully not, because you're doing the same thing. You're investing in yourself, and together you're more interesting people because of it.
Yeah, and your whole identity, I mean, you know, I'm 41 years old, and I'm still, you know, exploring and finding what I like, what I don't like. And again, it goes back to that whole identity piece, is you, for so long, especially, and I can only refer to moms who've raised kids, you wear so many hats, so you just don't know really who you are. You're like the cook, the counselor, the homeschooler. And then when you have a career on top of it, then that becomes another hat that you have to wear. And a lot of times you just don't know what you like to do, what is your preference, because you're constantly serving other people.
Yeah.
So I do like going out by myself, away from you, you know, even away from kids. And you get to meet people, and you get to learn more about yourself and who you truly are, and what you like to do.
Yeah, I would say from a guy standpoint too, like, I grew up with a dad who, you know, he loved me, but he wasn't the most expressive. He didn't share his emotions really at all, except maybe anger, you know. And when I grew up, I knew I didn't want to be that guy. I wanted to have a closer relationship with my kids, and there are things I probably could have done better, but I know I did better overall than my father did with that. And then later in life, when we had, not him and I sort of falling out, but his wife, my stepmother, kind of crossed some lines with me, and I had to put my foot down, and that kind of upset my dad. And my dad kind of wanted to cut off the relationship. I mean, I don't think he really meant to do that, but at the same time, he was upset. He didn't know how to really talk with me, and I started taking him out to lunch and investing in him. And he's like, I'm not sure how to handle this. I'm not sure what to say. And I'm like, well, Dad, it's going to be awkward. And we're going to keep doing this until it's no longer awkward. and we did. And he began to open up more and more and more with me, and then relax into the relationship a bit and be able to trust me, so that we are probably closer now than we ever were the entire time I was growing up or as an adult. And now he is beginning to share some emotional things with me and some of things that he's frustrated with or struggling with that I never would have heard from him before. But that's mostly because I kind of forced some time with him. And Josh McDowell, years and years ago, I heard him speak, talking about parenting and kids and stuff. And he said, the whole fallacy of quality time is a lie. That you're going to spend quality time with your kids. Like, I don't have time to spend with you now, but later on, we're going to spend quality time together. He's like, that's just not true. It's not a real thing. He said, all there is time or not time. He said, I spell love T-I-M-E. And he's like, I might be a terrible speller, but I'm a great dad. He said, the more time that you spend, you're going to find quality time in that actual time that you're spending. But if you're trying to cram quality time into a little bit of space, it just doesn't work. You need to spend time with people.
Yeah, especially with, you know, back to teenagers, you know, you could be doing, for us, cooking.
Yeah.
And kids are in the kitchen with us and talking with us, or even when we always have dinner together at the table, sitting around a table and, you know,
yeah.
and having conversations. Same thing with cleaning up. That's all quality time that you're spending with your children. You're hearing them out.
There's that downtime where they just start talking because they want to fill space, but that opens up more opportunities to
share. A lot of times it's even more comfortable, you know, it becomes the norm that, you know, you can share about your day or just some of the challenges that they've been experiencing. They're more likely to open up to you rather than, you know, as soon as they, I know, like when growing up, the kids would come home because now they're all quarantined or we're homeschooling, but a lot of parents would be like, you know, how was school? Zahra, being the girl, would give you the rundown, you know, and then Zachary would be like, it's good.
It's good. Fine.
Same thing as usual. Boring. But that's not the best way to have those interactions. And I remember when they were little, doing bedtime stories and talking to them as, you know, tucking them in. So it's very unstructured quality time.
Yeah. Even this morning, as Zachary was getting ready to go on the hike and go take off to pick up his girlfriend, while I was making breakfast and he was trying to figure out what he wanted to eat, and I was talking to him about possibilities, and then he starts telling me about his girlfriend and how their interactions, and I end up starting to talk to you or about you and our interactions and comparing and kind of giving him some advice, and that just became an opportunity for Zachary to sort of glean from me some ideas about relationships and how to handle them and things to say and all of that, just because we're hanging out and shooting the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about mechanics too, of like at the dinner table, Zachary brought out his phone the other day and we're like, nope, put that away, right? We're having dinner and we're talking, because that can quickly become the focus.
And oh, yeah, we could all be on our phones as eating dinner, you know, and we all would just, we'll be physically there, but we're not interacting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you put yourself in a position where you put away the electronics, like the whole movement where people would go out to restaurants together and put their phones in the middle of the table and nobody could touch them. And then there were some games associated with that too. But the idea being that, no, this is quality time and we're spending it together.
And ideally you start that, you know, at a young age. And I think that I don't think it's ever too late to start something, a new tradition. Because we do that all the time, you know, like we reset and we see a problem. We're like, okay, this is what we're going to be doing from now on. And quickly it becomes, you know, a habit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was glad to see, I know I did the dinner table with my three older kids. And I don't know that you guys did it as much before.
Oh, yeah. We always sat down and sat at the table since they were, like...
Did you?
Awesome. Oh, yeah. All the time since they were little.
Yeah.
Because that's what I grew up with. We always sat together and had lunch. Or all meals together and then tea time in the afternoon. But we never... In fact, I sat down in front of a TV and went and ate dinner. In fact, I remember one of the things that I wanted to do when I first came here to the U.S. was to sit in the living room and put my feet up on a coffee table because my mom, there was no way she would let me do that, and just eat in front of a TV. Like, I would see,
just
like, those...
because you could.
Yeah, you would see the movies, like the dinner trays and, you know, yeah, dinner movies. Or the dinner, you know, I used to buy those, is it the Hungry Man or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, I used to buy all of those.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was so foreign and it tasted so good. I would never eat them now.
Yeah. Well, I know when I grew up in a house as non-communicative as my family could be, we never had a TV on during the day in the house. That just... wasn't a thing. I know some families do, and the TV's just running, and people will say, oh, I like the background noise or whatever, but it's distracting. And I know, at least for some people, like for me, and a lot of guys, we're so visually oriented that when the TV's going in the background, it's hard not to look at it, right? It's hard to pull your attention away. Hey, there's moving things, lights, shiny stuff, you know, like, you can't not look at it. Mm-hmm. It was good for me growing up without that, sitting in the middle of the living room on 24/7. The only time we ever did watch TV was in the evening, maybe, or when we're watching a movie, which is pretty much what we do. We have a TV room upstairs, and we will go watch movies on it together, but we have just the one TV that's in the media room that's away from everything. Otherwise, yeah, we'd be watching TV all day. And not developing our relationships, which this very conversation that we're having now is born out of the fact that you and I sit down all the time together and have great conversations. I love talking to you, even when we're just sitting down having coffee in the morning together and waking up. We have these long conversations that are really, really great.
I know. Well, that's what I used to say too. It's one of my favorite things, like on a Saturdays, to wake up, especially in wintertime, by the fireplace and having coffee, and we'll have these conversations. And sometimes, and I think that's kind of where this came out of, right?
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because we talked a little bit about everything, and sometimes they were intense conversations, and sometimes there were these rich conversations as well. We were like, we need to record these.
Yeah, well, and especially because we come from different backgrounds, and because we have